From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Watchers with L.A. Marzulli, the Nephilim and Prophecy. Here's what's happening. Well, just moments ago, an asteroid the length of three football fields buzzed by the planet at the rate of 7 miles an hour. A second, rather. The asteroid called 2012 QG42 got relatively close. A month ago, scientists were not even aware that it existed. It's not if, it's when. As an anti-Islam video continued to spawn protests and violence across the Middle East, Libya's prime minister said now that at least one person has been arrested and others were in authority sites tied to the killings of a U.S. ambassador and three others earlier this week. In Yemen, anger over this film spread. Four protesters there died during clashes with security forces outside the U.S. embassy. Egypt, protests continue there. Is the Middle East ready to explode? Federal authorities have concluded that a 55-year-old Egyptian-born Coptic Christian man living in the Los Angeles area was the key figure behind the film, Innocence of Muslims, blamed, of course, for these riots and protests, even though we believe other terrorists got involved as well. His name is Nakula Vasily Nakula. He's on probation after being convicted of financial crimes and was twice sentenced to jail after being found guilty of intent to manufacture methamphetamine in the late 1990s. And court records also show that Nakula was also convicted on federal fraud charges in L.A. a couple years ago. As part of the condition of his probation, he was barred from using any online service at any location without the private approval of his probation officer. Well, we know that that film went viral, didn't it? What a mess we're in. Ryan Murrow, of course, founder of WorldThreats.com, fellow expert on the Middle East with us. Ryan, this situation here seems to be getting worse every day. What do your sources tell you?
It's definitely getting worse. I do have credible sources telling me that the reports out there that the American ambassador to Libya was raped before being killed are accurate. I obviously can't confirm that fully, but that is what my sources are telling me. So this is a defining moment right now for the U.S. relationship with these countries affected by the Arab Spring. Are these governments going to crack down on these groups that are attacking our interests and essentially attacking the United States because this is our property? Or are they just going to allow it to happen? And that's a very important question to ask. Libya, it seems, is taking a more pro-American direction. The security forces are investigating who is behind these attacks. And there were pro-American demonstrations in Libya today.
You know, Ryan, it might be that these areas cannot live with a democracy. You know, when we had, and of course, they were not Boy Scouts. Gaddafi was not a Boy Scout. Mubarak was not a Boy Scout. Saddam Hussein was not a Boy Scout. But at least they were able to temper their crowds. So who's better off?
Well, I think that a lot of what happened in the Arab Spring was inevitable. And the longer it took for this to happen, the bigger the explosion ultimately would become. But I think that you raise a very valid point about the institutions of civil society, the appreciation for democratic values not really being there in any large form in these countries. There are democratic elements there. There are secularist elements there. But the Islamists narrative really does rule the day there, and so there's a real ideological battle going on right now, and what you saw happen this week is really just a symptom of that.
Most of these people who are protesting right now have no idea that in the United States we have the freedoms to put things on the internet, to say the things that we want to say. They blame our government. They think the government's behind that lousy film that was out there depicting Mohammed as some crazed lunatic. They think the government was behind it. What they don't know is that our freedoms are so wide that we allow anything to be able to go.
Exactly. There's no appreciation for it. And a lot of it is because of the conspiracy theories that are in the Middle East saying that, you know, the satanic Jews control America and the government secretly controls everything. And that conspiracy theory has a lot more weight in the Middle East because their governments acted like that. They really had no freedom. So it seems more realistic to them to believe that the government is behind all this than there's an actual functioning free society.
So your take is that this situation is going to get worse before it gets better.
Oh, definitely, because either the forces behind these attacks are going to say this was a victory, so we're going to do it 10 times over, or the security forces of these countries are going to have to take them on, and that means bloodshed.
All right, Ryan's website's part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Next Monday, full program. Craig Hewlett joins us. We're going to talk about this entire situation. We'll get his perspective on what's going on as well. It may not be what you think. Prophecy, of course. What does this all mean? Some people today are talking about this as the beginning of Armageddon. Let's turn to John Hogue, an expert on Nostradamus. John, anything in the quatrains that might tie into this?
Nothing for 2012. As much as you see all of this eruption, certainly the astrology that's going on right now, we're at a peak of the forces of Uranus in astrology, which is change and upheaval, running up against status quo, which is Pluto. And in that regard, you see mass hysteria erupt. You see the hysteria of Netanyahu in Israel trying to foister a messianic view of Iran as a great threat. You see the Iranian leaders also invoke the 12th Imam in the Islamic apocalypse to come and appear in these final days. You have in our own country the same latent hysteria of end times thinking, which is what makes the situation in the Middle East at our time much more dangerous than at any
Good
other
point.
Time in the last 50 years.
Good point. And we are going to have you on election night to talk about prophecy and your predictions, okay?
Okay.
John Hogue, there he is. And he's also a guest on my panel at the Conscious Life Expo in October. Information on that you can find at our website, coasttocoastam.com. In Guatemala, a volcano erupts for the sixth time this year, triggering evacuations of several towns, more than 33,000 people fleeing the area there. Nearly a century after the fact, that was 1913 as a matter of fact, California's Death Valley has now been recognized as the hottest temperature place on Earth. On that time in 1913, it was July 10th, the temperature reached 134 degrees Fahrenheit. That's hot. Federal Reserve, in an effort to target the high unemployment, offered an array of open-ended stimulus programs designed to keep interest rates low until an economic recovery gains significant traction. In a strategy shift, the Fed's latest round easing will target mortgage-backed securities rather than U.S. Treasuries. And importantly, the Fed said it plans to keep interest rates low even after a recovery gains momentum. Catherine Austin fits with us here. Catherine, is this a good idea? They're throwing more money after bad or what?
I don't think it's a good idea, George, but, you know, the market was expecting quantitative easing, and they got more than they expected. This is open-ended, and that's a new policy for the Fed, much more aggressive than the last two, where they announced both size and duration. But the interesting thing about this, and this has never been done before to my knowledge, is they targeted the quantitative easing at the labor market. They're tying it to employment, which is ridiculous because this is basically a bank bailout without getting the banks to promise that they'll do anything. And we know what happened the last time when we gave them $27 trillion and didn't get any conditions. And the other thing is this is not tied to market weakness. You know, the Fed is saying that business activity is good. So this is really tied to household unemployment, which is really a function of other, you know, of fiscal policy and technology. So this is pretty interesting because the Fed is infusing a lot of liquidity into the market from here on out.
Why did the stock market jump and get so excited today over this?
Well, because I think they expected another QE3. They expected a quantitative easing, but there would be a defined amount and duration. And this is really more than the market expected. So some quantitative easing was priced in, but not as much as he's come out with. This is a much more bold strategy than was expected.
All right, we'll see what happens. Catherine's website, Solari, SOLARI.com. Up next, reality and dreams. We're going to talk about dreamed up reality in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Dr. Bernardo Kestra. Now, this is PhD. He's got his PhD in computer engineering, worked as a scientist in some of the world's foremost research labs, including the European Organization for Nuclear Research, that's CERN, and the Philips Research Laboratories as well. He has authored many scientific papers, and tonight we're talking about his work, Dreamed Up Reality. Bernardo, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Good, George. Thanks for having me. My, it's a pleasure to be here.
My pleasure. Tell me how a scientist gets involved in dealing with reality and dreams.
I think that happens when a scientist starts getting a little older.
Yeah.
And some of the, you know, some of the paradigms of science start becoming clear for the assumptions they are, and you start thinking broader about reality and asking yourself these questions. And I think that's what happened to me.
And when you did this, and you put it into this book form, underneath the title, of course, is Diving into the Mind to Uncover the Astonishing Hidden Tale of Nature. Do you see anything supernatural here, or is it all scientific?
I think it is all ultimately scientific and natural, but of course there are parts of nature that are unknown, and perhaps which fall outside the current scope of science in its methods, in its assumptions and values. I think whatever is true is by definition ultimately natural, although the word supernatural may have some use in society today to refer to these parts of nature that are not known and not understood.
What do you see as the difference between reality and dreams, or even the relationship?
Well, I think the most striking things about dreams is that when you're dreaming, you are pretty sure it's real, right? You don't even ask yourself whether it's real or not. You take it for granted, like we take waking reality for granted. And the way mainstream neuroscience explains this today is to say that our waking reality, like a dream, is a kind of hallucination produced by your brain. The same brain structures are involved in generating your experience of waking reality as those involved in generating your experience of dreams. The difference is that, and again, according to mainstream neuroscience, in dreams, your brain is free to generate whatever hallucination it wants. And in waking reality, the hallucination is modulated by signals coming from an external world outside of mind. And in fact, we postulate the existence of this world outside of mind, which we can never have direct access to, of course, because all we have access is our own minds. We postulate the existence of this world to explain why our experience of waking reality is so synchronized, so consistent across different individuals.
Why is it, Bernardo, that some dreams seem so real? You know, we talk about reality. People wake up and they go, my gosh, did that really happen? It takes them a while to realize it was only a dream. Why does it seem so real?
I have a different perspective on this than mainstream neuroscience. And again, mainstream neuroscience would say, well, it's just generated by your brain,
That's right.
Like waking reality is, but it's free from the modulation of an external world. I personally think that to postulate such an abstraction as a world outside of mind, which is an abstraction because we only live in our mind, is unnecessary to explain why waking reality is so consistent and synchronized across people. I think there are mechanisms that we can postulate to explain how mind can synchronize across individuals in such a way as to generate this consistent experience of waking reality, and yet all this being in the mind, even your body being in the mind, as opposed to your mind being in a body, which is, again, a deep abstraction of modern culture. And, of course, if that is true, if it's true that all reality ultimately is in the mind, both dreams and waking reality, with the difference that dreams are outside of this synchronization constraint, then, of course, that opens up entirely new avenues for thinking about what is life, what is death, what is physics, and so on.
If the mind creates it, is it reality, whether it happens or not?
I think everything is in the mind. I think your dreams are in the mind. I think waking reality is in the mind as well. I don't think there is an abstract external world of electromagnetic fields existing independent of mind and modulating your experience within mind. I think it's all in the mind. But I do think mind obeys certain regularities or laws, if you will, that it's not all a matter of, careening free will. And that's why we have the laws of physics, that's why we have this consistent, synchronized experience of waking reality. But ultimately, I think it's all in the mind. This is very counterintuitive for modern culture. We are very used to thinking of the world as something outside of mind. And we forget how much of an abstraction that is. Your entire life has been in the mind. There has never been anything you have ever experienced that was outside of the mind. And we create these abstractions as explanatory models to explain our experience to ourselves. And we got focused on this one choice for an explanatory model. But there are others which open many new avenues about what might be going on and what might happen in the future even.
What then is consciousness, in your opinion?
I think what we normally call consciousness is one specific mode of the experience of mind, if you will. Let me give you an example.
Okay.
Depth psychology talks, since Jung, since Freud and James, they talk about the unconscious mind, which are things that are happening in the mind, but we are not conscious of. I think what's happening there is the following. There are parts of mind that fall within a field of self-reflectiveness. What is self-reflectiveness? It's what happens when you're not only conscious of something, but you're conscious that you're conscious of it. For instance, right now, you're conscious that you are interviewing me,
mm-hmm.
but you know that you're interviewing me, and you know that you know that you're interviewing
it's
me.
It's my reality at the moment.
Exactly. And it's a self-reflective reality. You're aware that you're aware of it. And there are parts of mind that you're only aware of, but you're not aware that you're aware of them. Things that you know, but you don't know that you know them. And of course, that's just as good as not knowing them, because you tell yourself that you don't know them. That, I think, is the unconscious mind. And consciousness is this field of self-reflectiveness, the things that not only you are aware of, but that you are aware that you are aware. And that's the egoic mind, the mind we live in most of the time. But there is much more to mind than that. There are enormous depths of the unconscious, of things that you are aware, but you just don't know that you are aware of them.
How do we know that this reality that we perceive is not a dream, in that it's my dream and I've created you and my studio and my audience and the horrid problem in the Middle East? How do we know it's not in my mind and maybe you are thinking of something totally different right now?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. According to strict academic philosophy, you cannot know. It's just a reasonable assumption that that is not so, because you hear the reports from other people about what they are experiencing, and somehow they match with what you are experiencing. Other people within your studio right now would be describing more or less the same studio. So you think, okay, this is consistent, so we can believe that other people are also conscious and they are participating in a sort of collective hallucination.
Unless I made them up, and they're really not even here.
Exactly. So that possibility you can never discard. In philosophy, this is called solipsism. You can never completely discard that possibility. But you can reasonably infer that that is not so. Why can you do that? For instance, you can observe your own behavior. You know that sometimes you react in certain ways because of how you feel in your own consciousness, because of the fact that you are conscious. And you can also observe very similar, analogous behavior in other people, even other animals. So it is a reasonable assumption to say that they are also conscious and they are partaking in a sort of collective hallucination of reality with me. It is reasonable, but it is not 100% guaranteed.
You're right. No, you're right. I would assume, and I would bet money, that everybody that I know around me, we are collectively experiencing whatever we're witnessing. But I'm not quite sure. there's that possibility.
I think the truth might lie somewhere in between. I think other people are conscious. I think animals are conscious. I think they are experiencing a reality that has strong correspondences of form with the reality that I am experiencing, enough to make language possible, to make this correspondence of the meaning of concepts.
Let me give you that example. When I come back, Doctor, let's talk more about this, and we'll also take some phone calls as we talk about your work, Dreamed Up Reality, that perhaps we're just dreaming up the reality. And welcome back with Dr. Bernardo Kastrup. His book, of course, Dreamed Up Reality. We'll take your calls in just a moment. Doctor, in this situation, for example, if someone in a far-off land is going through some kind of episode, to me, it doesn't exist. I don't see it. I don't know about it. But I'm sure to them, it's very real. Where's the reality? Me or them or both?
Well, if our reality is in the mind, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's all in your mind, right?
Right.
We each experience a small subset of mind, according to the hypothesis I'm putting forward. So their reality is also in the mind, and it's just as real as yours, but it's a region of mind, if you will, that your egoic consciousness does not have access to. And I think that is the exciting part about this. What is the relationship between different minds? Are they ultimately only one, or are they fundamentally separate? I think they are ultimately only one, but each locked within a certain region, locked within it by a sort of amnesia, if you will.
What is the similarities between the psychic phenomena of telepathy, precognition, remote viewing? How is that tied together?
I think it ties together when you consider the role of the brain and its relationship to the mind, right? I think, we know that mainstream neuroscience says that the brain generates the mind. I think that is not correct. I think the brain localizes and modulates a subjective experience. It localizes it to a certain space-time locale, which would then generate all kinds of correlations between brain activity and subjective experience, mm-hmm. which is what we measure. But if the brain only does that, localizes a mind that is fundamentally unitary, then you are fundamentally connected to everybody else, whether it's a living person or a non-living person. And if you could in some way change your brain activity so as to free yourself partially and temporarily from this filtering, this localization mechanism of the brain, you could gain conscious awareness of things that are beyond the space-time limitations that your body occupy at any moment in time, be it perception across space or perception across time, which could relate very tightly to psychic phenomena like precognition, remote viewing, and so on.
When you talk about mind, are we talking about something physical as part of the brain or something not physical?
The very concept of physicality is a concept that arises within mind, in my view of the world. Mind is the substrate of existence, is that which is. Everything else is a kind of a vibration of mind, a content in mind. What we call physical is simply modes of mind that have enormous inertia, that don't seem to be amenable to the intervention of our free will. Like if you jump off a building, you will fall whether you want or not. And there is a physicality behind that because it seems so detached from our conscious will. But it may be the unfolding of mind, just like the unfolding of your emotions. It's just that there is a qualitative difference in how much mental inertia, if you will, is behind these different phenomena.
Let's take some calls, Doctor. Let's go to our first-time caller, Nathan, in Little Rock, Arkansas. Hello, Nathan. Go ahead.
Hello, George. How are you doing today?
Good, Nathan. Fine. Thank you.
Yes, I have a question for Dr. Bernardo. About, I'd say 11 or 12 years ago, I was laying down in bed with my fiance at the time, and it was kind of weird. I wouldn't say I fell asleep. I was more like just like a curtain just went over my eyes, and I guess I was dreaming at the time. I was in my girlfriend's room with her with two other people, and my girlfriend and this other person left the bed, and I was left in this room with this heavier set old man, and it was kind of strange. All of a sudden, he pulled out a crucifix and started doing an exorcism, it was very strange, and I was feeling this burning pin sensation, like pins going in and out, like hot pins all over my body. And I was screaming, and all of a sudden I came to, and it was kind of weird. My my arm was, even though the my forearm, my bicep and elbow was on the bed, but my forearm and hand was sticking straight in the air. And for about 2 minutes, I could still feel this burning pin sensation carry over.
That felt really physical to you, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And I'll tell you another thing. I don't want to stray off too far from the subject. And, George, I know you're well aware of this topic. Shadow people. I used to see them all the time before that. I haven't seen them since.
Believe it or not, Nathan, that may not be too far off the track anyways. With many of these things, Dr. Bernardo, of course, we're dealing with the mind, but he actually was feeling, for example, physical pain when this guy was playing around as an exorcist. What creates that?
This is very interesting. When I talk about everything being in mind, I don't mean that it's in any way less real, less palpable, less concrete, less physical than what we perceive. All I'm saying is that the physical is actually in mind. So I'm not surprised at all that somebody has a non-ordinary experience, a high strangeness experience, that feels entirely palpable and concrete, because that's a quality of mind as well, just like the rest of the world. What I think might have happened in Nathan's case, I cannot know that for sure, so I'm just speculating, is that when we are on the edge of sleep, in that hypnagogic state, certain functions of the brain relax. The reality-checking areas of the brain, what the neuroscience calls reality-checking areas of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, relax. In my hypothesis, it is the filtering mechanism that enforces a certain coherent storyline of reality that tells us what is possible and what is not possible, that relaxes, and more aspects of reality rush in, if you will, because you're taking those filters partly down. And since the brain doesn't generate consciousness anyway, but filters it, if the filters are partially inactive, more aspects of experience come in, which people could describe variously as manifestations of the unconscious or parallel realities or other realms and so on and so forth, which do not necessarily obey the standard laws of physics or even the standard laws of logic, because whoever said that all reality has to obey our Aristotelian logic?
Well, that's true. You know, whenever I'm at a doctor's office or a dentist's office, they always say you have one of the highest pain thresholds we've ever seen. You don't flinch, they say. You know, we might do a blood test on you. You don't move. Other people jump and, you know, they're nervous and everything. How much of that is the state of my mind?
I'm very envious of you, George. I wish I had a high pain threshold as well. According to my hypothesis, it is all a state of your mind, how much pain you feel, what emotions you are aware of, and even how you perceive reality. I think to a large extent, reality is mental in more than one way. I mean, in one way, it's mental because everything is mental in my hypothesis. There is no world outside of mind. But in another way, it's mental because the reality we actually experience is a projection of your mental states, of our concepts, of our culture, of our language. We tile reality with a web of concepts, and that's what we ultimately experience, not what lies behind that.
Let's go to Marguerite, west of the Rockies in Mesa, Arizona. Marguerite, how are you?
Hi, George. I'm doing well. How are
Good.
You?
Good. We're all well.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. Dr. Bernardo kind of answered my question, and that was about precognition. But there was a period of time where I was keeping dream journals because I noticed that some things I was dreaming was coming true.
That's the way to do it, too. That was a good idea.
Yes. So I actually had this dream about my uncle driving to my parents' house. I was no longer living in that state, but he was very upset because there was a baby that was born with a hole in its heart. And he was driving an old town station wagon that he used to drive around in the 60s. So I wrote this in my dream journal. And my mom called me about a week to 10 days later and said your first cousin smoked through her entire pregnancy, and your uncle's very upset. He came over. The baby was born with a hole in its heart, and it has to go into surgery. And that is what I journaled. And I had one other situation where I dreamt about a passenger train and a freight train on the same track with a huge collision. But I dismissed it because I thought, well, they don't run on the same track. And I came home from work about 10 days later, and the huge one in Spain had happened.
Ugh. What determines things like that, Bernardo? The ability to be able to perceive things. Some people are better than others. How come?
Yeah. I think many things play a role in that. I think ultimately what might be happening there is that it is a switch in our state of consciousness, which has to do with how much your brain filters are operating, how much the localization mechanism of consciousness is operating. And what could influence that, I think, one is genetics. Some people are simply born with an ability to take down the filters partially or temporarily. Others have to do with your emotional state. If you're highly emotional, things work in a different way in your brain. It may have to do with things you do yourself, like people who induce non-ordinary states of consciousness, which is something I did myself and I discuss at length in the book, for instance, with techniques of hyperventilation, meditation, brain entrainment, and so on. And it may have to do also with whether you are on the edge of sleep, in which certain filters are being taken down physiologically, because that's what going to sleep means. I think what is most fascinating about all this is that mainstream neuroscience still ignores all of these reports, like what we just heard, and dismisses them as quirks of the brain. Well, they may be, but they may be quirks of the brain in the sense that filters are going down and reality, aspects of reality that are ordinarily filtered out are coming in, and not quirks of the brain in the sense that they are not real.
If you learn this ability of reality and dreams, mind and matter, can this change your life? Can it alter things? Can you use it for your own good?
In the sense of creating your own reality.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk in the culture today about creating your own reality. And certainly a lot of people listening to me say that all reality is in the mind. We immediately conclude that. But note that I said that all reality is in the mind, not that you can change all reality according to your egoic free will. I think these are separate things. I think even if reality is entirely in the mind still obeys certain regularities, certain synchronization mechanisms, which enforce, for instance, what we call the laws of physics. Now, of course, if it is in the mind, then of course you do open new doors for the manipulation of reality. But you have to understand the mind first. I think the way to try to change your reality or influence your reality in some way is to change what you consider yourself to be. For as long as you are highly identified with the egoic mind, which is by definition the filtered mind, highly vulnerable to the synchronization mechanisms that enforce the coherence of waking reality, then you can't change your reality. You are at the mercy of those mechanisms, of those regularities. But if you succeed in identifying yourself with a broader mind and becoming cognizant to aspects of mind that are beyond the egoic ego, the egoic mind, then you might have a better chance of actually influencing what happens in the world, at least to yourself.
Speaking of the mind, your work makes us think. Let's go to Seattle, Washington. Chip, it's your turn. Go ahead, Chip.
Hey, Jory, how you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I just wanted to share an experience with a doctor. About a decade or so ago, my younger years, I was having a party with 15 people. Me and my friend were drinking and doing some other things, and before I knew it, we were floating outside of the Earth in an astronaut uniforms, and we were not at the party anymore, and we kind of were like, wow, this isn't real. We're sitting on the couch, in the party, but the party's not here anymore.
And you both had that experience?
We both had it at the same exact moment.
Wow.
And it lasted for a few hours, and we were testing it. We weren't in belief because we was like, wow, we're on the couch, but we're looking at the Earth right now from outer space. So we started touching, you know, the globe on the head and the suit. We're like, wow, this is real. So as it continued towards the end, before I ended up back in the front room, we were in this grid, and I felt like I knew anything, and I could ask it a question, and my friend was right there with me the whole time. And I could ask it a question, and it would float over to the corresponding area where the answer was, and it would appear in front of me instantaneously. Then I would know. I know it sounds weird, but when we ended up back in the front room, we were like, wow, this is amazing. And we carried that story for years and years and years. We still talk about it. And I had another experience a few years later with this guy some friends brought over. I've never even known him before. And we were watching this movie, and we were drinking, and he had a weird, it was weird when he came in there, just had a weird connection. And we ended up arguing with each other telepathically, like face-to-face floating in the front room. But what really freaked me out is when one of the words he was yelling at me came out verbally loud in the room, in a quiet room in a movie with us watching a movie. So I was like, wow, that was weird. So I was like, okay, well, he's smoking a cigarette. So I was like, all right, throw your cigarette at me. And nobody was talking. We were watching a movie. He ended up doing it. So I was able to control his mind, and I did it a couple times. And it got to the point where my friends had to take him out. So as far as the comment, the last caller made, as far as mind control or whatever, I believe that you can manipulate your own reality if you can tap into it, because I think maybe that's how we were created to begin with, to control a certain reality from remote. I don't know.
And for some people, Chip, it's easy to control that. I've seen this happen before, Dr. B., where people can control, you know, the outcome of dreams and also people's other perceptions. It's amazing.
Absolutely. I find this all fascinating. Before I even comment on what you just said, George, let me just tell your caller that the experience of leaving the planet and watching the Earth from outside is fairly common. Even Swiss psychiatrist Carl Jung has had this experience. So what is surprising is that our culture does not validate it. That's what is surprising, that everybody's having experiences like this, and we still dismiss it as something that is somehow invalid. So I do acknowledge that there is a certain perspective from within mind where you can largely influence your own reality and maybe even reality at large. For instance, lucid dreams are very amenable to your will. You can influence how the dream unfolds, but that's your own dream. There aren't other people partaking in that with you. I think there is a spectrum. The first experience your caller related was a collective experience. There were two people there. There are experiences where there are thousands of people involved, like the miracle of the sun at Fatima in Portugal in 1917, which Jacques Vallée described as a UFO, as a massive UFO sighting. I think individual experiences may have to do with an ability of oneself to unplug oneself from this synchronization mechanisms that enforce the storyline of waking reality. Like when you fall asleep, you unplug yourself from those synchronization mechanisms so you can have your own dream. You can play your own storyline privately. And there are cases where many people are involved, so you can't talk about everybody unplugging at the same time and somehow falling in the same alternative storyline. What might be happening there is a fluctuation of the shared storyline, a fluctuation that may not comply with the laws of continuity and physics.
Well, good job on the work here, Doctor. The name of the book, Dreamed Up Reality, it's available Amazon.com, of course, and you can order it through your favorite bookstore if you so choose. Up next, L.A. Marzulli joins us, Watchers, the Nephilim and Prophecy. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.